This podcast was recorded Friday, August 23rd at 10 a.m. Things might have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like since President Trump is proclaimed King of the Jews, I'll be named King of the Christians.
I wouldn't buy that robe yet, Mike. No. Let's talk politics. Welcome to Snollygoster, the King of Ohio's political podcast, coming to you from the studios here at WOSU Public Media. I'm Steve Brown. We are the king of political podcasts here, right?
Well, at least the prince. Certainly, we're the chosen one.
A bishop, maybe,
at
least.
Anyway, yeah. So, I'm Mike Thompson. This week, our Snollygoster of the Week award goes to a multimillionaire former congressman who's using a new book to criticize the political elite.
Interesting. But first, the death penalty. Ohio was once known as the Texas of the North when it came to executing condemned inmates. Since 2000, 55 Ohio prisoners have been put to death for their crimes. 52 of those came between 2001 and 2014. Since 2014, just three.
Support for capital punishment in Ohio seems to be wavering. Count House Speaker Larry Householder among those now questioning whether we should be still executing inmates.
Over the years, you know, we've gone from electrocution to lethal injection, and now there's issues being raised about lethal injection. So it's just becoming more and more difficult to do, and it's more and more expensive.
Those issues Householder mentions are a big reason for the drop in executions. The state has been struggling to find lethal injection drugs because pharmaceutical companies don't want those drugs designed for other purposes. Purposes to keep people alive. They don't want them being used to kill people.
The concerns from Householder and drug companies also come amid a legal fight. Earlier this year, a federal judge said Ohio's lethal injection protocol amounted to cruel and unusual punishment. And Governor DeWine says executions will not resume anytime soon since the state cannot seem to find an execution method that would pass constitutional muster.
All right, now that we're caught up, we welcome our guest, Ohio's preeminent expert on the death penalty, Andrew Welsh Huggins. He's a reporter and editor with the Associated Press and author of the book, No Winners Here Tonight, Race, Politics, and Geography in One of the Country's Busiest Death Penalty States. Andrew, welcome to Snollygoster.
Great to be here. Thanks, Mike.
We have gone from one of the busiest states to perhaps one of the quietest. Is it because of the courts, the drug companies, or is it just a lack of political will on the part of death penalty supporters to find a solution to this issue?
It's probably all of those things. I mean, there's been changes in the law that have resulted in fewer prosecutors seeking fewer death sentences to begin with. So since I wrote that book 10 years ago, there's just been far fewer people sentenced to death in Ohio. But the big problem has been the sea change with drug companies and their willingness to have their products used in executions. This is a problem that's bedeviled every state. It's hit Ohio particularly hard. What's frustrating for Ohio is that other states like Texas and Missouri have been able to find supplies of a drug called pentobarbital, but this is a compounded version of it, and those states are still, Texas just executed someone the other day. Ohio can't seem to find this supply of pentobarbital. They used to use pentobarbital, a single drug essentially puts you to sleep forever, and I think all sides would agree if they could find that, they would use that.
Why can't they find it?
They're having trouble finding a pharmacy willing to provide it, and they're concerned that if they go through the black market, that the judges here, the courts here, are going to just slam them shut, and they won't be able to use it.
But Texas and Missouri have been able to either stockpile it or go through those.
They've got someone that's willing to give it to them. Is not concerned. Ohio has not. Not through lack of trying, has not been able to find them.
Interesting.
You mentioned this sea change that's happened. A lot of that happened here in Ohio in 2014 after what many called the botched execution of Dennis McGuire. Explain what exactly happened there and how that came to be sort of a turning point here.
So the execution of Dennis McGuire used a never-before-tried two-drug method of midazolam and hydromorphone, I believe. And there was a reason this had never been tried before. His execution lasted 26 minutes. I did witness that. It was the longest execution in modern Ohio history. It was very uncomfortable to watch. He gasped and snorted repeatedly. His chest rose and fell. There was just clearly something wrong about it. And essentially, after that, executions just stopped. There were civil lawsuits filed, and it was clear nobody wanted to have that happen again, including the Department of Corrections. So they launched a 3-year search for a new set of drugs, and they came up with the current method, which is the one that's now been found. It has not been found unconstitutional, but the judge's ruling against it was so strong that the DeWine has said there will be no executions under his watch with that method, which does include this troublesome drug called midazolam, which is a sedative, and the concern there is it doesn't fully render inmates unconscious.
Now, I witnessed an execution in 99, a Central Ohio inmate, William Wickline, and it was very uneventful. It just seemed like he went to sleep. I think the execution, if I remember right, it's been a long time now, but if I remember right, the person before him, they had trouble finding veins. That was one of the executions. But what changed between 99 and 2014? Were they using the same methods, or were different people reacting differently to the drugs?
The main thing that changed was in probably the execution you watched, the first drug was sodium pentothal, which is similar to pentobarbital. It just puts the inmate so deeply unconscious that, frankly, if you used enough of it, that would kill them. So that drug is known to render people completely unconscious, and then that was followed by a paralytic drug, which essentially freezes the inmate in place, and then a drug that stops their heart. What changed is that the supplies of sodium pentothal and then pentobarbital dried up for these reasons that we've discussed. The drug companies just stopped. Well, mm-hmm. In the case of the sodium pentothal, they just stopped making it. Pentobarbital, the drug companies have put it off limits. And now they've gone to this midazolam, which does not have that same effect as pentobarbital.
It seems a little odd to strike down a method of lethal injection for being cruel and unusual, or at least it's a strange terminology to use. How does the law balance between a punishment that is too cruel and one that's not, even though it's still killing the inmate?
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the history of capital punishment is trying to find more quote-unquote humane methods. So we had hanging, which was considered at one time a very humane method if it's done correctly, that it's a, you know, drop and the neck breaks. But that was replaced by the electric chair, which was meant to be using this modern clean technology to immediately put inmates to death. Well, we saw a lot of problems with that, so that's where lethal injection came in. And the balance is at what point does the effect on the inmate outweigh the how humane a method it is. Now, up until around 2011, the lethal injection really had passed, you know, constitutional muster and had not been seriously challenged. There was a ruling in 2008 that upheld the use. There's always been a lot of concern about that second drug, that it was paralyzing inmates and nobody could actually know how much pain they were feeling. The big problem has come as those barbiturates have gone away, and drugs that don't put the inmate so deeply asleep that they can't feel anything. That's where this cruel and unusual argument has come up very strongly.
So we're now in a sort of a holding pattern. We've been in this pattern for a number of years now. But during this time, there's been criminal justice reform. Sentencing reform, the realization that we have been incarcerating African Americans at a much, much higher rate than Caucasian Americans. And you mentioned that there are fewer convictions now, death penalty convictions. Is the criminal justice sentencing reform or criminal justice reform playing a role in this go slow approach with the death penalty at least?
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. I mean, the two big things happened with capital punishment in Ohio is in 96, the sentencing reform allowed life without parole as an option for the first time. And wow, death sentences at that point plummeted because there are a lot of juries that they would definitely take that option. And then in 2005, the law changed to allow prosecutors to seek life without parole without ever having the death sentence on the table to begin with. That led to another huge drop. Certainly, there's a lot of societal concern about exonerated inmates, almost all of whom are African American, and there's the case in Cleveland with the 1976 killing with the two brothers and their friend. They were barely out of their teens. They spent almost 40 years in prison, some of those on death row. Cases like that have had those affect, I think, prosecutors' decisions and certainly juries think about that a lot. So I think it's kind of a combination of a societal skepticism questions about innocence, but also these legal changes, which have given options that juries really prefer in many cases.
And DNA technology, it was around in the late 90s, of course, but it's really, it led to a lot of these exonerations.
Yeah, DNA and groups like the Innocence Project have taken some of these on.
Despite all these changes, we do still have a very conservative legislature here in Ohio. We did hear a comment from Larry Householder about his support for the death penalty is wavering. Can you see any instance where the death penalty is barred here in Ohio, where they abolish this idea of putting inmates to death?
Not until after redistricting takes effect in about 4 years.
Which would make for...
It'd be a more mixed legislature. Right. It wouldn't be necessarily a GOP stronghold. I've said this before. I cannot see circumstances where the Ohio legislature anytime soon would eliminate the death penalty. We have a de facto moratorium basically right now. I don't think anybody's like ready to rush out to change things, but nobody's willing to take it off the table.
Right, but if you asked every Republican in the legislature personally, maybe not every, but I think a vast majority would still say they support the death penalty on an individual level.
Right. And keep in mind, you often get the same answer when you poll Ohioans. Most polls, people still support the death penalty. It's the second question where would you choose life without parole as an option? That's where the support switches. But most people stop listening after the first question.
What about methods? I know Governor DeWine has asked legislative leaders, Householder and Senate President Larry Obhoff to take a step back, look at the whole system, and look at other execution methods. Can you ever see Ohio going back to the electric chair, using the gas chamber or firing squad? Or is it going to be find a lethal injection method that works or nothing else?
I can't see going back to the electric chair. I can't see the firing squad, although ironically most death penalty experts agree that the firing squad is the most efficient and painless, ironically, method. I don't think there'd be support for either of those. Nitrogen gas is this one that has been floated. I'm not sure that would be similar to the traditional gas chamber, but keep in mind that if the legislature approved a new execution method tomorrow, that would instantly be in the courts for who knows how long, 3 years, 4 years, before it finally was approved as a method. So that's not going to speed up executions in Ohio. Yeah. So I don't know. I thought Householder's comments were very interesting. I'm guessing his support for executions hasn't wavered, but he's looking at the reality of the method of execution and just wondering if maybe it's time to move on.
And we saw that debate. That was the early on when the sentencing reform was coming in, was I think lawmakers just saw how much money we were spending building and maintaining prisons, and it just became during the recession, it became a cost issue as well as a sentencing fairness issue. And it just costs so much to fight these cases and fight these death penalty cases until to their end. As Householder mentioned, it's getting more and more expensive to put folks to death.
Right. But it doesn't actually cost that much more money to keep someone on death row. And frankly, it doesn't even cost that much to execute them. We're talking about a few hundred dollars for drugs. Mm-hmm. The real expense is the years and years of litigation and the cost of hiring the defense attorneys and paying the prosecutors.
How about this idea about using fentanyl seized by police?
no one really took that seriously, did they? At least no one in a position to approve it.
No, I mean that idea has been raised several times since the opioid crisis hit in Ohio. Previously it was like seized heroin and now seized fentanyl. I think there are probably a number of people who secretly wish that was an option, but again, that would just lock capital punishment up in the courts for years as we battled over the propriety and legality of using an illegal drug.
Andrew Wells Huggins, a reporter with the Associated Press, also the author of the book No Winners Here Tonight, Race, Politics, and Geography in One of the Country's Busiest Death Penalty States. As we've said, Ohio no longer among the busiest death penalty states. Andrew Wells Huggins, thanks again.
You're welcome. Thanks for
Andrew.
Having me.
We'll be right back.
On All Sides with Ann Fisher, we cover the topics that affect life in Central Ohio, from immigration to the economy to the continuing opioid crisis.
But the reality is if you don't save someone who's overdosed, they have no opportunity to recover.
Hear thoughtful, in-depth conversations about the issues that matter now. Subscribe to the All Sides with Ann Fisher podcast at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, time now for our Snollygoster of the Week award, which we dole out to the shrewdest politician we can find. This week, it actually goes to a businessman, a current businessman.
He is, but he's also a former politician, albeit not by choice. Jim Renacci, the hardline conservative who rode a Tea Party wave into Congress in 2010, has a new book out. It's called The GOP's Lost Decade, an inside view of why Washington doesn't work. And there are at least a couple choice quotes in there.
Nothing too crazy, but just some things that made us laugh. Like Renacci saying, Washington has created a whole class of people, the political elite. This from a former congressman who is worth north of $30 million and maintains large investments in fast food chains, consumer electronics, drug makers, and oil companies.
When he was in office, he's one of the 10 richest congressmen. So if you had to think of the political elite, it would be Jim Renacci. Also in his book, he criticizes former Ohio Governor John Kasich for running for president more than he was running the state of Ohio. Keep in mind, Renacci ran for governor while serving in the House. Then when Josh Mandel dropped out of the Senate race, Renacci left the gubernatorial race and decided to run against Sherrod Brown. And then he lost in a landslide.
Yeah, he lost big time. So, Jim Renacci, for taking issue with Washington's political elite, of which he was a member, and criticizing people for running for office while holding another office, which he did, you are our Snollygoster of the Week. If you have a suggestion for a shrewd politician or a shrewd political move, we welcome your nominations for Snollygoster of the Week. Send us an email to snollygoster@wosu.org.
As always, be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes or whatever platform you find Snollygoster on. And until next week, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.